Thank you for the introduction. Good morning, everyone. I'm Ajay. Today, I'm here to present ConfLLVM, a compiler for enforcing data confidentiality in low-level code. This work was jointly done at Microsoft Research with my colleagues and some other colleagues at the Saarland University and the Max Planck Institute for Software Systems. We are surrounded by applications which deal with confidential data. This could be your credit card information stored in the browser, the cryptographic key pairs for your production servers, or in some cases, the super secret genome sequencing data for your users, which you extracted for some analysis. Protecting this data has been challenging in the past. For example, the heartbeat bug, which was disclosed in 2014, left around 500,000 web servers vulnerable to attacks. The problem becomes even more severe as these applications move towards the cloud, where the infrastructure they run on is untrusted and managed by a third party. Even if the third party is trusted, the implementation of these services could have some bugs which can leak the data. The data can be attacked in various steps of the computation. For example, when it's stored in the database. Typically, we use different type of encryption schemes to protect the data at the rest. The data can also be leaked or attacked when it's being sent over the network to the server. TLS has more or less solved this problem and has made internet the way we see it today. Kernel protection mechanisms have ensured that the other users running on the server or other malicious applications running on the server cannot steal your data. Recently, techniques like Intel SGX have also made sure the data is protected from malicious kernels or even the hypervisor. But this picture is almost complete, but there's still a small window which we need to worry about. The bugs in the application, which were introduced while programming, could be exploited by the active attackers to coerce the application into revealing its secret to the malicious parties. Let's look at a simple example. This is a handle request function from a typical web server. What this does is first authenticates the user and then serves a file over the HTTP connection. Even in such a small function, we can see that there are many bugs possible. Let's see them. Look at them one by one. Although very uncommon, sometimes the user could inadvertently log the password into a log file. A more common example is of a buffer overflow, which can lead to copying the password into the output stream. And more complicated attacks, like compromising the format string for sprintf, could lead to dumping the entire stack. OK, so now what we want is to protect all the data in the application. The solution is simple. Let's put a fence around the application and make sure that the application cannot write anything outside. Then we provide it with a secure channel, which encrypts everything that goes out of the application. This works for some applications, but there are many applications who actually want to send out data in clear, like the logs, error messages, or some other non-confidential data. This programming model restricts this application a lot. Typical applications have a mix of confidential and non-confidential data. What we would ideally like to do is identify each and every variable and recognize whether it's holding confidential information or non-confidential information, and restrict only the confidential information from going out. This problem is called information flow control or taint tracking. Specifically, taint is a single bit of information attached to each variable in the program which identifies whether or not that variable holds confidential information. Previously, this problem has been studied a lot. Some solutions apply static analysis techniques which at the source code level try to analyze the program and identify the taint of each variable. These techniques are usually not complete because they lack the runtime information or rely on memory safety and type safety, which is inherently absent in C. These techniques have been applied to high-level languages like Java. The other approach is to mark the sources and the sinks, and at runtime, track the taint of each byte in memory and each register, and figure out whether the taint is leaking from the program. These techniques, as you might have guessed, usually have very high overheads. The taint check work, which I mentioned here, has around 37x overhead over baseline. And this makes this technique unusable for live applications, but more useful for debugging or post-mortem analysis. The other approach is to bring type safety and memory safety in C. These techniques also have a large overhead, but if you look at it carefully, they are trying to solve a bigger problem than information flow control. So we introduce ConfLLVM. ConfLLVM is a compiler with guarantees. ConfLLVM guarantees that if you compile a program, it will not leak any confidential information as clear text. How do we track the taint in ConfLLVM? Let's look at a simple example. Suppose this is a dummy function bar, and its corresponding pseudo assembly. What we would want to do is, as the program runs, we would want to record the taint of each register and each memory access the program does. Thus, the taint tracking problem breaks down into two parts, tracking the taints of the registers and tracking the taint of the bytes in memory. This is where we make a key observation. If suppose somehow through an oracle, we know the taint of each load and store that's happening in the program, we do not have to track the taint for the registers. This is because since registers are loaded from memory, we know their taint at the compile time and we can just get rid of all the checks before the register moves and operations. But who is going to provide this information to us? The solution is simple. We ask the programmer. The programmer knows whether each variable is supposed to hold a private information or a public information. But we don't want the user to go around and then mark each and every variable in the program or mark each and every load and store. So what we ask the user to do is to just annotate the function headers and the type definitions. In that, we only ask them to provide the private annotation, and the rest is assumed to be public by default. Then using a data flow analysis, we propagate these taints to the function bodies and identify the taint of each and every variable in the program. But now this is a problem. What if these annotations are wrong, which is the case for most of the bugs? The programmer intent doesn't match the implementation. A simple example is, suppose this bar function, which expects a private A star, is called in a context where A is a buffer of size 16, but the index which is passed is say 1024, and it leads to a buffer overflow, and A of I ends up pointing to a public buffer. Yes, this is obviously going to happen. So this is where the dynamic checks come in. We assume that the annotations which the user has provided us are untrusted, and we assert them at runtime. That is, suppose this is the pseudo-assembly generated for the program, we insert checks before each load and store to ensure that the annotation which the user has provided are actually consistent. But this requires us to still maintain a bitmap for each byte in memory. How do we get rid of that? Again, the annotations come for help here. Suppose we partition the entire program memory into two parts, public and private, and store the confidential in the private region and the non-confidential in the public region. Then checking the type of a load or checking the confidentiality of a particular load or store is merely a bound check on the address, such as this. And since we know the taint of each variable statically, we can allocate them into the correct region. We can further improve these checks and get rid of all the comparisons and branches before the load and store. We propose two schemes to do so. The first is to use Intel MPX. In the Intel MPX scheme, we use two bound registers from the MPX register set and load the bounds of the public and the private region in it. And depending on whether a particular load is supposed to be a private or a public load, we insert bound check instruction before the load and store. This is how the instrumentation looks for this scheme. And that is the memory layout for the scheme. The next scheme uses Intel x64 segment registers. We use the FS and GS segment registers and set their bases to point to the start of the two memory segments. We then use the 32-bit versions of the registers involved in the memory operations and prefix the FS or GS segment depending on which type of access we want to do. This is again how the instructions are transformed and the memory layout. Notice here that we do not insert any extra instructions before the memory access. We just modify the memory access. Okay, great. Now we have a technique which doesn't leak the private information at all into the public information. But suppose a program wants to declassify some data. Like you have a private string and you want to encrypt it and then make it into public. The R technique won't let you do that at all because the ciphertext is still a function of some arithmetic operation on the private text. To get around this, we allow the user to write some trusted code. The trusted code is not compiled with our compiler. Thus, it's not subject to any checks. We allow the compiler to insert stubs, which basically the user code can use to call into this untrusted code. Sorry, to the trusted code. But the user has to be absolutely sure that there are no bugs in this trusted code. The same interface also allows us to link with external third-party libraries for which the source code is not available. Of course, under the assumption that you trust the implementation of those libraries. This is a typical interface it looks like. There's one last gap which we need to fill in, and that is control flow integrity. Let's look at a simple function call like function like this, where you have a foo, the execution starts in foo, calls into bar, reaches the end of the bar, and returns back to the next instruction, that's a bound check. But remember now that we're not providing type or memory safety, which means that there could be buffer overflows in the program, and the return address could be corrupted. It could be modified to skip over the checks and directly go to the load instruction, in which case all our guarantees are thrown out of the window. To avoid this, we need some kind of a control flow integrity. Specifically, we have to be sure about the indirect jumps, indirect calls, and call return sites, because the target they jump to here are stored in memory where they are vulnerable to attacks. We don't have to worry about direct calls or direct jumps because the compiler knows exactly where it is jumping. For these three particular cases, we have to worry about two things: whether we are jumping to a valid jump site, that is, you're not skipping an instruction or you're not jumping in the middle of an instruction to do a syscall, and to ensure that the taint of the registers expected at the jump site match with the taint of the target. For this, we use magic strings. Now, what are magic strings? Magic strings are sequences of 8 bytes carefully chosen in such a way that they do not appear anywhere in the program. We insert these magic strings at all valid jump sites, indirect jump sites, like the start of a function or after a call return. We also append these magic strings with the taint encoding of the taint of the registers that are expected. So for example, in the second example, you can see the magic string before bar has 1010 appended with it, which basically means that the first and the third argument it expects is private, and the second and the fourth argument is public. And notice we don't have to insert any checks for the rest of the arguments because they are passed on the appropriate stack. I lied to you when I said that was the last problem we have to solve. There's another small problem which we still need to worry about. This entire technique which we have implemented is implemented on LLVM. The LLVM code base is around 2.5 million lines of code when we forked it, and every day new optimizations are added to it. What if there is some bug in the compiler? What if some malicious optimization destroys the metadata which we propagate in the compiler? This could lead to bugs in the program. To get rid of that, we come up with conf verify. Conf verify is a separate tool which takes in a compiled binary from an untrusted compiler, disassembles it, and ensures that all the checks are present in the binary. Contrast to the compiler, the source code of the conf verify is merely 1500 lines of code, which can be easily verified by hand. Conf verify also allows us to use our technique with other compilers as long as they conform with our instrumentation techniques. Now coming to the evaluations. We want to evaluate conf LLVM on two fronts. One is the performance overhead and the programmer overhead. By programmer overhead, we mean the number of lines of code which we have to change to make the program compile with conf LLVM, which includes both the annotations and also some other modifications. We also study the conf LLVM's impact on certain different applications and try to analyze them. The first is the spec CPU's C benchmarks. We only look at the C benchmarks and not at the C++ or Fortran benchmarks because currently our implementation only supports C. To understand the overhead of the runtime instrumentation, we mark all the data as public, because irrespective of whether the data is public or private, the instrumentation is going to look similar. The bars shown here show the relative execution time as compared to the baseline. You can also see that there are multiple bars. This is because we apply conf LLVM in steps, increasing steps. The first bar here is the baseline, which means that the application is compiled with a vanilla LLVM compiler. The second bar shows the application compiled with a vanilla compiler, but uses our custom allocator, which deals with the partitioned memory. The third bar shows the application compiled with conf LLVM, but conf LLVM does not insert any checks. This is to identify the isolate the overhead of some optimization which we had to disable, which were not compatible with our technique. The next bar shows conf LLVM compiled applications, but with only CFI checks inserted. And the last two bars shows complete instrumentation for the segment scheme and the MPX scheme. As you can see, as is expected, the overhead from the MPX scheme is much higher than the segment scheme. This is because we have extra instructions inserted before the load and stores in the MPX scheme. The average overheads from the segment scheme is around 12% on spec and up to 23% in the worst case. For the MPX scheme, we see overheads as high as 75%. But still, these are orders of magnitude less than what the dynamic taint tracking techniques introduce. The next application which we compare on is Nginx. In Nginx, we mark all the data as private, except for the logging module, which sends out text in clear. The URIs in the module, which are logged, are encrypted before being stored into the log. For this one, we report the throughput achieved from the server, so the smaller bar is worse. We also vary the response size to study the impact on the performance. We see that as the size is increased up to 40 KB, the overhead is really less. This is because the application starts spending more time in the kernel, which is uninstrumented. Here, the average overheads vary from 29% to as less as 3%. For the programmer overhead, we had to modify around 160 lines of code for the total of 124,000 lines of code in Nginx. And we also had to add a few 138 lines of code for the trusted module, which includes encryption and the OS interactions. The third application which we evaluate is a machine learning application, a classification application, which runs inside Intel SGX. The application is a neural network image classifier, which classifies images of 3 KB size. The graphs report, the bars shown here report the average execution time over 10,000 runs for these 3 KB files. We can see that the overhead here, again, with the MPX scheme is up to 26%, which is well within acceptable limits. Finally, we also provide a meta theory proof, which relies on the invariants checked in conf verify and proves termination sensitive non-interference on private data. This proof is available as, a technical report on archive. To summarize, we present conf LLVM, a compiler technique for information flow control that uses combination of static and dynamic analysis to ensure that the private data doesn't leak through clear text channels. We also present a novel memory partitioning technique for efficiently checking taints for data in memory. And we also introduce a lightweight control flow integrity technique that just provides the guarantee which is required for the IFC. And finally, we managed to reduce the trusted code base to around 1,500 lines of code by the use of ConfVerify. Thank you.
Gernot Heiser, UNSW. If your secret, your protected data is an encryption key, how do you prevent it from tainting all the encrypted data?
So that's a particular case which we would handle in a trusted module, because there's an interaction between, there's basically a declassification happening here. That is, you have a tainted information which is producing untainted information that cannot be handled inside our technique, so it has to be done in a trusted module.
Paolo Verissimo from the University of Luxembourg. I think that the coverage of your approach is only concerned with data that might leave the system, right? Because you have a homogeneous system. So I'm trying to understand your adversary model. So the adversary sits on your machine, it will take control of everything, including the secrets, right?
So we assume an active adversary who can control all the inputs coming to the system, who can also change some arbitrary modifications to the input coming into the system. I mean, it doesn't sit on the application. It doesn't control the code. The OS isolation technique still exists. We are only looking at bugs in the program, which can be exploited.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So you don't resist attacks by the basement, so to speak, meaning that you consider that the OS is perfect.
Right, but for the last case, right? We have shown that it also can be applied inside Intel SGX, which is kind of orthogonal to our technique and puts the operating system also outside the trust domain.
We'll take it offline, thank you.
The question? I had a question. So can you tell us how you handle functions, the stack of functions that have both private and non-private data?
Yeah, so the stack frames of these functions are completely duplicated. So if I go back to this figure, so we can see that the program memory has two stacks, two heaps, and two globals. So the stack frame is duplicated across both the stacks, and they go in a lockstep. So depending on which variable you're accessing, you would access the corresponding stack.
One of the questions was the one that Kostin asked before, and the other one was, how you generate the major strings for the control flow integrity?
So while doing the compilation, we leave just placeholders in the place of these magic strings. And once the entire binary is generated, we do a scan to randomly generate a string, check if it exists anywhere, and if it doesn't exist, we choose it as a magic string. And we go back and substitute it inside the entire program. So we leave placeholders.
Not a question. This is for you and for the preceding speaker too. Please start your graphs at zero.
If there are no other questions, okay, we have one last question there.
Hi, Victor van der Veen from Qualcomm. I just looked at the paper, and there's something about implicit data flow. So can you maybe talk a little bit about that?
So this particular technique handles explicit data flows, but we also have a switch in the compiler which lets you disable all implicit flows. Basically, the compiler doesn't let you branch on any private taint at all, and thus it prevents implicit flows in that case. But we still don't look at any side channels or other kind of flows.
All right, so no more questions. Let's thank Ajay again.